Welcome to the SDR Disco Call Vidcast and Podcast, a show designed for brand new sales reps working in the world of tech sales. I'm your host, Neil Buyan, and I'm going to be taking you on a journey on the SDR Disco Call Vidcast and Podcast. Did you know that you can watch this show live with the guests on YouTube? This show is available on YouTube at happyselling.io. Hello, listeners and watchers, and welcome to another chapter of the SDR Disco Call Show. The reason this show exists is to help you understand what the hell is going on in the world of sales development, predominantly in the world of tech sales. My name is Neil Buyan, and I am your host. My job is to find some really cool people in this space and in this world, bring them to your ears and eyes, to learn more about them and their journeys. And if you're watching this on our YouTube channel, please make sure to help us out with the algorithm by giving us a like, comment, and subscribe down below. And if you're listening to this in your local podcast platform, what would really help get the show out even further is by giving a rating and also sharing this episode with anybody that you think could benefit from the show. And with a guest that we have today, he's somebody that has graced our presence in the past, and he's come back in for round two. And when he reached out to me on LinkedIn, he said, "Neil, what's going on?" I'm like, cool, let's get it in. And here we are today. So without further ado, guest, could you tell us, who are you, what do you do, and where in the world are you based at?
What's popping, everybody? I am back. It is James Say What Sales Buckley of Sell Better. I host the Sell Better Daily Sales Show. We get cutting edge. We try to get the best and brightest of sales and sales leaders into the show every single day. And we do this so that you, our audience, can come live every day and listen in or watch the show and see real people doing the job and learn from them. And that's because we all learn by doing. Everybody, whether you're visual or audio or kinesthetic learner, we all have a learning style, so that it exists in all platforms, both live, recorded, podcast, and we travel around. We do a lot of events. It's a blast. Check us out, sellbetter.xyz. And I'm here to talk about a few different topics that I think are somewhat controversial, some of them, and others are probably just things that everyone should be waking up to right now, because a lot has changed since my last appearance on the show.
Woo! And that is a strong introduction. So, James, and again, for all of our listeners and watchers, with James with Sell Better, his Instagram, The Daily Sell Show, all of these links will be included in the description below. So please make sure you go check them out and give them a follow. And James, just for the person that stumbled in this for the first time, or they're hearing this on their commute to work or coming back, and just give us a little, like, a 30,000 foot view, like, who are you and what's your experience doing?
Man, so I cut my teeth in the door-to-door sales space back in, I'm going to say, like, 08, 09. I started doing, that's 2008 and 09, 2009. For those of you that are like, damn, that's a ways back. Yeah, so I did residential for a while, and I was an Orkin pest control rep. So pest control, door-to-door, knocking on people's doors all day, even through the 5 o'clock hour, because that's when people were home. So you kind of needed to be out there until 7, 8 o'clock, sundown really was the game. I also sold Kirby vacuum cleaners, and I was loaded up into a van, and we drove around the entire Southeast knocking on doors, selling Kirby vacuum cleaners and picking up all types of other generations of vacuum cleaners along the way to take back, basically killing your vacuum and selling you ours. And then, of course, on the B2B side, I did door-to-door, but I was with AT&T. So we sold phone lines. And my best pitch that I had was I would basically loiter in stores until they had to hang up their phone to use their credit card machines. And the pitch was, you know, I can add another line for you for $20 a month, and you wouldn't have to hang up your phone taking orders to be able to run credit cards. Wouldn't that be nice? And they'd always say yes. And it was such an easy sale. You just had to be there long enough for them to have that problem. So it was an instant add to their existing account. Great upsell opportunities. And then in 2014, when I graduated from college and became a professional big boy, I got a software sales job in East Tennessee. I'll say it again for those of you that didn't catch it. A software sales job in East Tennessee. That's a rare find. So I learned what Salesforce was. I started to get heavy into cold outreach, like cold calling and cold email. And then I began my brand, Say What Sales, which is still my brand today. And I will always say to people, if you're a salesperson, we're the same person. And that's because I attract salespeople. I am a born and bred salesperson. Prior to being in sales, I spent 15 years in the kitchen, in and out. And that's, you know, if you know anything about kitchen work, you know, it gets hot in there. So that's why I did sales, was to get out of the heat from time to time.
Love that. Thank you so much, James. And what I want to do for our listeners and watchers, we're going to take a quick look at our previous episode to see some of the highlights that we discussed in that episode.
I was going to be in 110 degree heat walking around anyway. So here I am, working pest control, door-to-door residential, AT&T, and Winstead Marketing, doing door-to-door B2B, driving around the southern United States, doing mom and pop shop upgrades, you know, get another phone line for your credit card machine, so on and so forth. I did really well door-to-door B2B, door-to-door residential. Yeah. So here I take this tech job, fast forward to like 2014, 2015, and now I'm sitting in the air conditioning. There's a ping pong table on my right. There's bean bags, right? Like I'm like so comfortable.
Yeah,
making
yeah.
calls in the AC. So I'm 2 days into this job and I'm sitting in a room next to an account executive who would later become our vice president of sales. Mm-hmm. And his name was Aaron Ryan. And he said, man, you sound so good on the phone. You're going to be so good at this. Fast forward like 2 years and I became the top performing SDR.
So that's amazing to see, James, like you have changed a lot, not just physically as well. You're looking so much healthier and you've been on a journey and we're going to dive
right.
into that.
That's right. The total weight loss, Neil, is over 70 pounds.
Woo!
35 kilos for those of you that are in the UK.
Thank you. Thank you for that conversion as well, helping us out here in a meet. But, you know, in that episode, it was a super powerful episode. And again, I did talk about it in that episode and I just want to kind of rehash it because you've just reminded me. You know, you are a salesperson, you're attracting salespeople. And one of the things that really made me really happy when I met James is obviously I was a little starstruck when the guy slid into my DMs and we were the talking and everything. But James said this thing to me at the beginning of that first meeting is just, I'm just like you, right? He helped set the level. And from my point of view, that's very humbling, but it made me feel very comfortable. So I appreciate you for doing that, James, as well. And that episode, and again, I highly recommend to our watchers and listeners to go back and check that one after this one. But there were so many things that we spoke about, you know, overcoming your personal challenges that you're going up when you were growing up as well with your partner, with work and all of that. We spoke about, you know, how to build that personal brand, the importance of being a content creator, working in the world of sales. And there were so many, like I learned so much from the episode. So again, James, a big hat off to you. And yeah,
watching you take off these last couple of years, buddy, has been really something. I see your content in my feed every day without fail.
I love that. Thank you. I want to get everywhere as much as I can. And not just in the world of sales, as James knows, your boy Neil raps a little bit. And again, I appreciate all of your support as well.
Snipes, check him out.
Snipes, check me out. Check me out with my bars. I've got bars for days, bro. But also for our listeners and watchers, I always have to give a plug to our guests. So make sure that you go check out James on LinkedIn. And he did teach us something about LinkedIn connections and followers as well. So I'd like you to mention that in a second. But please check him out. He's got so much awesome content. And also don't forget to check them out on Sell Better, on TikTok, on Instagram. They have got content for days. But James, for our listeners and watchers, I think what would be nice to start this off with, like compared to where we were, you know, last year speaking, and you've seen me grow, I've seen you hella grow. What's changed and what's new since we last spoke, dude?
Yeah, so this is probably the part of the conversation that I think is most controversial. So I love that we're starting here to get it out of the way. I know a lot of influencers that are wildly successful, very frustrated with what is going viral on LinkedIn and why it's going viral. They're unable to repeat these things. And I'll give you a great example. There are a few people you've probably seen. Happy to name names because I'm quite supportive of them. The Zoe Hartsfeld and Darren McKee, for example, who can post a selfie with, you know, some great context, sales techniques, valued statistics, some sort of lesson learned, right? And these folks are great coaches, great mentors. Like, I have nothing against these people. I just see those selfies go thousands of impressions and 19 reposts and reshares. And when I post a selfie, me or my friend Tom Boston and I are constantly going back and forth on awkward selfies, right? And like, How come our selfies don't perform? Well, I don't know the answer to that question, but I have a few theories, and that's what I'd like to share with you today.
Please share. And to kind of preface this as well, I'll give a little take of what I've seen, some things I've experienced on LinkedIn, right?
Yeah.
And we can then like segue into selfies and pictures and virality. So
well, I think there's more to it, but I use the selfies as an anchor.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So like, here's what I've experienced the last few months. There's been a massive dip in terms of impressions and what's going on with the algorithm. So what I experienced, James, was I launched this thing with MSC, like the Power Hour, right? And things started kicking off. And then around December, things dropped. And it just kept dropping. And I got to February and I measured my LinkedIn stats and my visibility dropped by 74%.
It's so crushing, isn't it?
It was. And the thing was, people are telling me, like you just said at the beginning of the show, I'm seeing you all over my feed. I was getting feed or DMs from people like, no, where's your content? And I'm like, bro, I'm posting it on a daily. And, you know, there was like tips of posting stuff within the actual post and then in the comment. And I actually changed my LinkedIn tactics based on somebody else's advice and it bombed. And I learned the lesson of go with what I know rather than listening to somebody else, right? But
you're hitting a lot of high notes, Neil.
Yeah. But it's a test. But then, you know, admittedly, and I've said this to everyone, like I do use ChatGPT to help with my content. And what I do is I have the idea. I know what I'm saying. I come up with the content, but it helps me like Grammarly to polish it up a little bit. But what I did start seeing is everybody's posting a ChatGPT type post. And I understood that with LinkedIn. And this is just my assumption, James, and I'd love to get your two cents on this. But LinkedIn kind of had a reset, where they saw a lot of AI generated content because we had the top voice badges and, you know, people that went away from LinkedIn. So LinkedIn kind of had this thing is like, right, we need to clean shit up a little bit. And I think it started messing with the algorithm and people were just pumping so much content that it just effed it for everyone. But then I say it's kind of like a stock market. Things are going to dip, but then eventually it's going to pop. So you got to keep posting. Because
my favorite thing that you just said is it's a lot like the stock market. And here's my 10 cents for what you've just described. First of all, I agree that a lot of exposure has gone down on creators specifically. And I find it quite ironic. I think Sarah Uy posted very recently about how disappointed she is in the way that LinkedIn has supported the creators that have been that, and I'm using big air quotes here, the 1% of their user base that creates content, which that 1% has been the same number for what, 10 years at this point? It's never been higher than 1.5%. And then we're back to square one. It's lower the following year. And the end result is that it keeps getting all these profiles and these people basically use it as like a job hunting platform until they recognize the fact, unless you're a salesperson, right? Which, you know, then you start to see it from a completely different perspective. With regard to what is trending, I think that I have a few theories that might open up some thought. And I think there's some frustration here. And my goal here when I share these theories is to relieve people of that frustration. Not to cause them to feel more frustration. So I want to preface by saying that. So here's my theory. A lot of the folks that we see that post things that we can't understand why they go viral, they have an engine working in the background that we're unable to see. And sometimes that engine looks like this. This is my theory. I'll use practical prospecting, my friend Jed Marley, as a great example. Jed has thousands of people that subscribe to his Substack and his newsletters.
Mm-hmm.
And if he were to time his posts and then use that newsletter to advertise that that post is available, prompting people to leave their thoughts in the comment, engage in that post, if timed correctly, will see an immediate boost in activity, prompting the algorithm to favor that post and put it in front of more people. This is a system being used to enhance visibility, which is what you described earlier when you said visibility has gone down. That's theory number one. Before I give you theory number two, I'll pause.
Okay. I hear that. And I think with, you know, the posts that are going out and they have that engine and they know there's certain times. From my point of view, what I experienced was I broke my own rules and I started doing different things because as soon as I saw a dip, I said, I need to try something else.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like And it's kind of like I did what I tell SDRs and sales leaders not to do is when you create your sequence, don't change anything dramatically.
You won't know.
You won't know. You need to give it a little bit of data and run rate.
Yeah, I believe the scientific method will refer to that as a control.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So when I started seeing the dips and everything, and then when I started seeing other people post where they're relatively, and here's the other, okay, so here's another, we've opened a kind of worms here, where...
I knew we would.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So in my line of work, I talk to people that have just come into this industry. And LinkedIn is a new thing for them.
That's right. And they're blind almost.
Yeah, yeah. But they've unfortunately had this silver spoon methodology put into them that you need to pop on LinkedIn and you need to blow. So they start creating this new content where the film that comes into my head is the one Limitless with Robert De Niro, where he's talking to the guy and he's saying, like, you've only been in this game for so long, like, you can't just pop just now. But these newbies are popping, and I sit there as the old Robert De Niro, just like, how the hell are they doing this, man? Like, but I have to make sure that my ego doesn't get fucked by it. So
the comparison game will ruin
us. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what I say to myself, but then I remind myself, James, I said, look, the reason I'm doing what I'm doing, the reason I post that content is because I posted things that other people weren't posting, and that's not my niche, but that's me. And if somebody does post that selfie and it gets 350 likes and it gets all these comments and mine gets like 2 or 3, in my head I'm like, well, that's them, and you know, this is what I do. But it's that stock market game of don't change because I see other things. But I have noticed I've had to mix my content up a little bit, and what I mean by that is show a different side to me. And that's been driving my engagement back up. So with the bars and other things that I'm doing, family life and all of that. But yeah, I'm going to pause there. And that's kind of my reflection back on that.
We're gonna come back to family life and balance and time management, because I believe I have quite a few nuggets to offer in that realm since we last spoke. And I think I talked about like time management and task management in the last one. Maybe if not, we'll tackle that here in a second. I want to provide my next theory for how things go viral and why. And I don't think people think about this type of stuff, but ghostwriting has actually become quite a lucrative business for so many people that have understood the LinkedIn algorithms and what they favor for some time. I remember speaking with a ghostwriter just a few months back who basically pointed to my content and was like, you're missing a lot of the keys that support what LinkedIn promotes from a writing style perspective. Now, I have a writing degree. My ego is very typical to say, well, I don't need anyone's help writing. I write just fine, right? But if you're not the strongest writer, for example, or if you just understand that this is a burden that you don't want to undertake because you are interested in other priorities, people are hiring ghostwriters to write content consistently on their LinkedIn profiles and other social media networks as well. And we get frustrated as people that don't hire ghostwriters and create our own content that gets 8 reactions, right? And we're like, what is going on? It's not you. It's someone else behind the scenes, and you know nothing about it. Again, the goal, relieve you of this frustration.
And I can vouch on that. So again, without mentioning names, these are people.
No, you never want to out the ghostwriters of the world. They're very effective people. I have nothing against ghostwriters.
No, 100% agree. So, but this is how I had to wrap my head around it. So I met a few sales influencers and coaches that have really good followings, and they do some really cool fucking content, right? And one guy, I find he wanted to book in time with me to ask me how the hell did I do what I did with Happy Selling. So it was just a networking call, get to know each other, share like, you know, decks, slides and all of that. And then I turned around to him and I was just like, can I ask a question? And he was like, yeah, go on. I was like, how the hell do you do what you do? And he just says, I outsource it. I was like, really? And he said, I have like a list like every week of the topics that I want to talk about. I kind of give my 2 cents on all of those sort of topics. And then I have somebody out in East Asia that runs, creates the actual visuals, the carousels, and helps clean the copy. And we've been working so long that I now trust that I don't have to go through that approval process with them. But they all ensure that I have 30 days worth of content where at least 2 or 3 posts are coming out a day. And I was like, dang. And when he told me the money that he was paying for it, it wasn't that much. And he said, and I asked him the question, like, on a cool copy, do you think I should do this? And he just said, well, here's the thing now. You like doing those things. You like writing those posts. That's what you find enjoyable. I don't.
You also have a different goal.
Yeah.
You have a different goal than they have. And this is a good moment to talk about this for just a second.
Yeah, please.
the goal really does matter when you are looking for whatever it is you're looking for out of your created content, posted content, published content on LinkedIn or any other social media channel for that fact. My goal is to create opportunities. Those opportunities vary from marketing to sales opportunities, collaboration opportunities, influencer opportunities, et cetera. Okay, fine. But that's my goal in all the things that I create and do. Some people have the goal of gaining more followers, getting more connections. Ghostwriters and these other solutions that I've mentioned here and that I will continue to mention are a great way to achieve that goal with very low lift and low spend. Neither of these are bad. They are effective depending on what the goals you have are. Yeah. Some people are wildly turned on by the fact that they can gain 1.2 million followers on a platform. Mm. I could give two shits about how many people follow me. It's about the quality of the relationships that I can build with strangers for me. And I got to do that on my own. A ghostwriter can't do that for me. So we have two very different goals for those two different individuals, myself and this other individual that wants 1.2 million followers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we're going to talk about a lot of stuff here today, Jen. I love talking because there's so many things that I want to segment within that. Like, you're right. We all have different goals and purposes because when I meet somebody in coaching or, you know, they're asking for advice about LinkedIn, I ask them the first question is, why do you want to do this? Why do you want to grow your brand?
You're in discovery mode at that moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, they're going to give me the honest answers because they want to book more meetings or they want to generate more pipe and, you know, they want to have a big personal brand because that's what they've seen somebody they've looked up to do. And I'm like, cool, but you need to kind of have some core values. Like for me, and I have to show example first for them to understand that. Mine was, I didn't like any of the sales content when I was coming up in sales and I found it very boring and droll and I knew that sales could be fun. So I wanted to have content which people could relate to, but they could see my take on sales against the playbook, the, you know, the books on people's shelves and everything like that. And to quote our mutual friend, John Barrow, sales from the streets. I wanted to just have a different side to it because I was comfortable with that. And in my early sales career, I was too scared to put my voice out. I was sometimes worried about giving my opinion because it would go against the status quo. So my point of posting is to show other people you can be yourself, you can do your own style. And some people fuck with that. Some people don't, but that's cool. So when I say to them, if you want to start talking to your prospect, stop thinking like a salesperson and think like your prospect, because a CFO may not speak sales speak, or a head of marketing may not be speaking like a salesperson. So try and connect with you. That's the kind of vibe that I'm giving to them. But sometimes they come in because they see their bestie in sales doing this and they want the revenue, they want the glitz and glamour. But then here's another point on the followers that you just said, like not giving a fuck about the 1.2. I agree. Because I've said to somebody once, I said, okay, if you want to get to 10K followers, 30K followers, 50K followers, I said, imagine this. One day you have to go on stage right now in front of 50,000 people and you have to command that stage and speak on that microphone. Would you feel comfortable doing that? And they're like, I didn't think about that. Because with a following comes attention, comes negativity, comes backlash, comes a lot of stuff. So I'm like, wouldn't it be nice if you could build it up so that you're comfortable as it's growing rather than trying to get the big 1.2 bag right now? And the very last point, sir, before I forget it, is the algorithm bit. I've kind of this kind of phrase that life is an algorithm. There is an algorithm in life. You attract what you put out there in life. So like-minded people attract. This is a human algorithm, right? But on LinkedIn, okay, I'm going to say this is what fucks me off. Is when people complain about the type of posting or, you know, what they're seeing on their feed. And I sit there, I'm like, dude, it's what you are liking and viewing and clicking and reading and expanding. You are your own problem.
No, but that's why I see your content in my feed, though, is because I engage with your content on a regular basis. That brings me to my third and final point of why these people's posts go viral. Mm. They are highly engaged. Mm. They add thoughtful commentary in places. They react to other people's posts. They create content and send it to people that it's relevant to. And that is why it gets the attention that it gets. It's not enough in 2025 and beyond to simply create content and hope that it hits a high note. We have to disseminate that content in very strategic ways. So we're all prospecting people, right? This is a great hack. This is like the sales hack for this particular show. We're all sales people in the room. If you're going to create content that is about a topic that your prospect gives a shit about, why not in one of your emails or DMs, send that piece of content to them and ask them for their opinion publicly, right there, engage. This is going to put that piece of content on the map for your target audience more often, and it's going to give you a great contextual reason to reach out to somebody that you're prospecting with something that's completely relevant to them and ask for their thoughts. This, boom, kicks the door down and opens for great conversation, which is where discovery can start happening. And that's the goal of everything that people do in the sales world before they have that first call. How can I set this up for a great discussion where I get to ask some relevant discovery questions that could help this person? Not help me advance my pipeline, help this person.
And yeah, I love it. I love it. And again, we're going to have fun here because going to my training days, I would always talk about SDRs and salespeople use make love with content, right? Marketing are your best friends where they're creating all this great collateral of one pages, testimonials, ebooks, white papers, and all of this. And most of my sales are like, well, what am I going to do with this content? It doesn't book a meeting. And I'm like, so here's the point that I go on about value. So this is how I learned what value was. So old Neil thought value, James, was my platform, the features and the cool shit that it could do. I saw that as valuable. And my VP of sales said, no, that's not value. And I said, well, what is value? Like, we've got a great company, we've got funding, we've got great founders. He said, that's still not value. And he said to me, value is helping somebody learn something for free without having to sign a sales order. That's valuable to them to teach them something in a new way.
I like that.
That is value, right? Yeah, and that's how it stuck with me. And I'm like, well, look, if the prospect isn't ready to book a meeting with you now, give them something that's going to help them flourish in that role or in that task, and they will remember you so that when it is time to pick up that meeting again, you can, right?
Also, think about the way that lead scoring works. There's almost always a certain trail that you can follow with prospects. And if that trail starts with you, and you send a resource they engage with and they opt in to hear from your marketing team because they wanted that resource and they had to opt in to be able to get it, right? It's a gated resource usually. Okay, fine. Now they're opted in. Are they beginning to open those marketing emails? Have they downloaded that white paper that was in that third nurture campaign touch? These are all buying signals that salespeople need to be on the receiving end of so that they can use those contextually in their messaging. This is one of those keys to marketing and sales alignment, which we can also discuss.
We're definitely going to dive into campaigns, but even coming onto that point of the content piece, because I think a question I'm going to ask in a moment is, where do you start if you don't know where to start, right? But I wanted to give some examples of stuff that's worked for me in the last couple of months. So a few months ago, I was in Paris giving a workshop to a sales team around cold calling and all this cool stuff, which was cool, but this is a cooler bit, right? So when the head of sales of that company reached out to me to have a discovery call, one of my first questions at the beginning of the call is, how did you come across me? And he said, I found one of your podcast episodes from 3 years ago, where you were talking about running a team and helping out a French sales rep. And that got me the listening and then got me searching Neil Happy Selling on LinkedIn. And this is where it gets even funnier, right? So yeah, thank you very much for the flowers. That's another thing I want to talk about, flowers in a minute. Towards the end of the call, the guy was like saying, let's do the cold calling thing. And I said, what about, you know, LinkedIn presence, building out your profile, optimizing it? He said, I don't really want them sharing content right now. Like, you know, and I said, but bro, and I didn't call him bro, but bro, if it wasn't for my podcast and me doing that, we would have never had this conversation, right? And he was like, you're right. And I said, okay, cool. I've had some people DM me that have now become coaching clients where they've come across my music posts on LinkedIn and then realized that they love that same genre, and it got them reading more of my contents, then coming onto my podcast, then coming. And I've had some people say, I've come across your stuff on TikTok, because something I learned from music, and there's a clip I recently shared on LinkedIn where this music producer called Crackalack, and he says, you know, imagine you get that important call where somebody's going to ask you for your work or your content, and this is your 5 minutes of fame where you can show the whole world who you are.
Yeah.
But it's just imagine that you don't have anything. You don't have that back catalog of content or anything. That would be a shame. And that could be the time that, you know, things don't pop for you. But in the last few weeks, I've had people say, do you have sales content? I'm like, yes, here's a whole list. No, do you have any podcast episodes? Here's a whole list. Do you have any sales tips if I can't afford you as a coach right now because I just don't have the personal development budget? Here's TikTok, here's Instagram. There's a whole bunch of free shit here for you. But it's having that content. I'm grateful now that for years where none of that content performed or got me direct revenue, it's now helped me later on. And I've got a shit ton of content and I love keep creating that content.
I've said this in a few different ways, but I think the best customers come from this path. The content is the road to the connection. And that connection is what leads to a conversation. And that conversation is sort of where a relationship is built. And some people will call that step trust. Once you have that, you should have no trouble uncovering an existing opportunity or straight up asking for one that they didn't expect in the first place. And the law of averages, of course, kicks in at that point and says the more opportunities we have, the more sales we make. So for me, that is like, and I've said this for years, that's like over 2,000 years of human instinct that we were created with to sit around fires and eat meat and share stories with one another.
Yeah.
And like that, the content to the conversation, content to the connection to the conversation, to the relationship, to the opportunity, to the sale, that is the most common path that I believe customers follow more often than not. And if you look at the marriage, whether it's connected, disconnected, disjointed, broken, if you look at that relationship between marketing and sales, I think regardless, you will find that 99.9% of customers follow that pattern. They engaged with something that led them to something else that got them in front of a salesperson, that created or uncovered an opportunity that solved a problem for them. And that is the nature of what all of us millions of salespeople do for a living, whether we want to admit that or not.
Yeah.
Regardless of what your LinkedIn headline says.
Yeah, 100%. And on the content, like what you've just said, like the how it builds, I think you need to like create a visual for that, James, because I think that.
I do have a visual for it. I'll send it to you. But it's a beautiful marriage of something being searched for or engaged with because there is an existing need that this salesperson knew nothing about. And then at the same time, our existence becomes unveiled to them through whatever search they may have done on a whim on a Monday morning at 7:58 while they're having their coffee before they start working.
Yeah.
And they bookmarked that.
Yeah.
It could be months. Yeah. But they'll come back and they'll be like, I still have that problem. I found that thing. What's that thing? I saved it, I think. There it is. Hey, Neil. I found you on a website.
Yeah. 100%. And the power of content, it's, you know, I think I'm lucky in the sense of before I got into sales, I was creating music content. So I kind of knew, and that's how I got my bookings. That's to your point.
Any kind of media experience, and you fall in love with this connective tissue between you and the audience and then finding prospects in the audience. And man, 100%. What a beautiful process, right?
100%. And to come to that point of somebody like yourself who creates a lot of like beautiful content, like I love it when you come up on my feed on TikTok, on LinkedIn as well. But then we have the new salesperson or the person that's been in sales for a while and they've realized they need to kind of pull their finger out, James, and start creating content. From my point of view, sometimes I'm like, please don't just repost what your company posts on the LinkedIn page, but they need to start somewhere.
I think you can repost anything you want for what it's worth, but you need to add your thoughts.
Like,
it can't be a blank, random repost. That's not going to go anywhere.
No, because it's just like a copy and paste, and it doesn't do.
It's
and for the algorithm,
it
doesn't do nothing. Imagine salesperson comes to you and said, "Right, I want to create content because I need to start somewhere, and I want to start posting today," but they're a bit unsure on two things: one, their confidence of what will people say, and number two. Like you said, if you want to reach out to prospects, what two bits of advice would you give of overcoming the fear of posting and what they should start posting with?
Yeah. Okay. So for the confidence piece, I'll tell you what helped me. Now, I've always been a relatively confident person, so let's start there. But my delivery and how did it get polished? How did I become the one take James, right?
One take in the booth. Let's go.
No, in the booth. Let's go, right? And we make the magic. It's a freestyle every time, but it comes out
magic. Yeah.
When you do it in the mirror and you really look at yourself, fall in love with the way that you're delivering it and your authenticity. A lot of times we get handed scripts. A lot of times we get handed material, and we believe that memorizing this material is like it was in high school or college, where it's a reciting of this material. A recitation, I think, is the word.
I'm making that up.
I don't know.
But
we believe that's the job. No, the job is to say things that matter in a tone that matters. So when you say it, look at your body language. Feel the tone and the inflections in your voice. Look at your eyes and imagine that you're in that box looking at a human being, and that's the eyes coming back at you. How do you feel? These small things, if you commute, do it in the car. This was wonderful for me when I commuted to work for 35 minutes every morning. I was like, all right, what's going to be my opener today? Let's go. No music, just me in the car. People thought that I was like singing or whatever. Like I got chuckled at a couple of times. Who cares, right?
Yeah, who gives a damn? Who gives a damn?
Down and hit that cold call power hour, my delivery clean, fresh every single time, because I spent 35 minutes on the way to the office polishing it like a brand new quarter. Right. So it feels really clean when I get there. So that'll help you overcome the confidence, knowing thyself. Right. But then also the practice makes perfect part of it. I'll say this. My friend Richard Harris will often say it is OK to have a script. It is not OK to sound scripted. And I think those two things usually slap reps in the face that come in, sit down, put their headset on and just go through the motions, say the same things over and over. No tonality, very monotone. Hi, thank you for calling AT&T. How can I help you today? Right? No one is excited to have those conversations. If you are not having fun selling what you're selling, no one is having fun buying it from you. That is 100% true all the time. I don't care who you are. Now, we can talk a little bit about how to get started, because I can share my journey on how I got started.
Please.
I think that the biggest problem we have is the search for perfection. We see the perfect video from the Alex Hormozis of the world. We see the John Barrows, the Morgan J. Ingrams, and we believe that our very first post, even though I've been in this industry for 3 months and just got off ramp, that that is going to be exactly like those people's posts. I assure you, they are not. And that is okay.
Yeah.
So, step one, hold your phone in front of your face and speak directly to your audience. Couple of pro tips. Don't look at yourself. Look at the camera.
Yeah.
That is something that your audience will appreciate when they're viewing your content. Step two, caption every video. For a while, I didn't think this was important, but it turns out adding captions does help people stay on the video longer. And that's because sometimes they're in positions where they're scrolling and they don't want the audio to be disruptive. So the captions help them stay on the video longer and consume more of your video, which aids in the algorithm helping its exposure. Y'all, this is important. Add captions to every video. And then my final pro tip when you're doing this is don't worry about the stutter. Don't worry about the stammers. You know, if they're bad, they're bad. Do it a second, a third time. But if it's close to perfect, just post it. Just post it. And maybe a third pro tip. Don't do anything without a CTA when you're first starting out. That CTA is to promote, to prompt thought. So good CTAs to start with. What are your thoughts on this? Or how do you deal with this? Drop it in the comments. Or do you have a resource that helps you get through this problem? Drop that resource in the comments for everybody, right? Like these types of calls to action promote engagement. Sometimes you get like competitors in there that start like throwing sand at each other and it goes viral because of the comments. I've seen some comments that have more impressions than the original posts. And that's good. That's good for exposure too. So like, we have to stop thinking that everything that we touch is going to be gold because this influencer that I've followed for 5 years is gold. That is an unrealistic expectation. And there are probably a lot of other pieces to that puzzle for that influencer that you don't see behind the curtain. There's a Wizard of Oz back there pulling all
Yeah. You're right. You're right. We're going to geek the hell out here right now, my bro. I tell you that. And I love this. These are golden tips. And I can add on to those pieces as well, right? So, like you said, just pull out your phone, because again, I on my my TikTok, I get on this day. So videos that I posted a year ago, when I look at them, I'm like, Neil, what the hell were you doing, bro? But I'm proud of how cleaner and better it looks and how quicker I can get it done now. And I know all the angles and transitions. But a tip given to me by a guy from Texas who's on TikTok, and he's a sales guy, but his TikTok channel is all about aftershaves. And the guy gets like the millions in the views. And I went to him, I was like, David, how the hell do you get those millies? And he said, here's the problem, Neil. On TikTok, whenever I see a salesperson, they're treating it like a LinkedIn webinar. And they're talking as if they're on a webinar and everything. And he said, the idea is to your point, James, you talk to the camera as if you're talking to one individual. Because when that person's on the other end of the phone, it feels like you're talking to them. And he said, that's how you connect. You're not talking to a massive audience, right? The second point of captions, and this is something I've learned recently on Instagram, is our social media platforms' AIs are now listening to the videos and they're looking at the visuals so they know what's in the video. So whereas before, it's what you put in the caption. The AI didn't give a damn about what was the content of the video. Now the AI can now suggest music to the type. So if I talk about a controversial topic, it will give them this run fast drumming music. I'm like, how the hell do you know this is
that? Really smart.
Yeah. So it's important. That's why adding the captions allows the AI and the algorithm to know what is the specific content of the video. So adding captions definitely helps on that side.
Wow.
And the other point of it, you know, being polished. Yeah, with the big dogs that I do look up to, like, all right, one guy who's my favorite, and he's my favorite sales comedian on LinkedIn, is Corporate Bro, Ross Pimentel, right? But I followed Ross when he was Hot Pants on Instagram before he blew up into Corporate Bro and all of that. And I still watch his old videos today. And a lot of people may not know about his old videos, but I've seen him go through that creative process of, you know, making it big as Hot Pants, then Corporate Bro, then going with Corporate Natalie, then LinkedIn, then getting a TV series, then going on for a whole show. And I was like, I've loved watching that process. So it doesn't have to be polished. And as you said, there is a Wizard of Oz curtain going on. And as we now know, a lot of people outsource this shit, right? They just do recording.
Well, we could talk about that too. I mean, I think there is place. And again, these people are just absolute gems in the space. But a lot of the influencers that are gaining these followers are using paid agents. Agents like Jerry Maguire that are out there setting these meetings. I can actually point you to one that is probably one of the most successful ones out there. I think he manages like 30 clients. He posted about it recently. His name is Anish Lal. Okay. Anish is like the Jerry Maguire of LinkedIn. This guy can take an incredible creator and make them famous. And there's nothing wrong with doing this. Everybody that wants that service should take advantage of it. It's very smart. Mm. But remember what your goal is. Remember what your role is. Roles and goals, those matter.
Yeah, right?
If your role is a marketer and you're a growth marketer and your job is to build lists and, you know, create awareness and reach, someone like Anish is wonderful for you because he can make you the center of attention for a hot minute for a good long while, and he can be consistent with it, right? And I've seen him work wonders with some influencers. It's remarkable to see that growth. The goal matters. If you can pay Anish and tie dollars back to it, do it all day.
Yeah.
But if you're going to pay Anish and your goal is to get followers and you have no revenue coming in from those followers, why are you doing it in the first place?
Yeah. And that's the thing, because I think sometimes people see the follower count as, and you know, everybody measures success in different
ways. That's true. We all measure things very differently.
But if somebody says to me, no, I want to hit 10K followers, I'm like, why? They automatically think by having that amount of followers, it will bring revenue. You know, I'm just shy of 10K. I'm not a fucking millionaire, bro. I ain't got like money coming out my ass, right? It like followers does not equate to.
Was the goal ever for you to become a millionaire though?
No.
Then you're right on track, bro.
Yeah. 100%. Like my goal, and it still stands today, is to do how I want to do what I want to do when I want to do it and have as much time for me and my kid whenever I want it. And I have that.
Yeah. I think that people often get into things thinking it will pay off later, but they don't know how. I had a conversation in Austin, Texas with Scott Lease, and he was like, me and everybody else in our position, we're trying to figure out that big payout, you know? And I was like, man, I never had my eye on that.
No.
You know, like I've never been a gambler. I've been to Vegas a bunch of times. I don't think I've ever, I laid one bet down and it was because John Barrows, my friend John, gave me $1,000 and told me that I had to bet it on one number on the roulette table. And I lost it. And he was like, oh, high five. Maybe next time. And like, that was it. It was like a welcome to the team type thing in 2019 when I first started with it. But, you know, that's like the only bet that I've ever really laid down. I guess I bet on the pool table. I do that. But everybody's looking for that big payout. And I think the thing to do right now is to stick, to be loyal to the companies that are providing you with a well-being, with a paycheck, with a roof over your head, with food on the table. This is an economy of cutthroat employers.
Yeah.
Right? It's this, and sales specifically is a game of what have you done for me lately? And they don't look past yesterday.
Yeah.
Right. I saw a great post from Scott that was, you're willing to spend, what was it? You're willing to spend 6 hours letting me go, right? But you're not willing to spend 6 minutes to tell me why it's happening in the first place. Like, or before it gets out. It was an incredible post, right? And I think this is part of the culture issue, you know, and again, I'll go back to the assets that we provide. When companies don't provide assets to their sellers that help them to level up consistently, they're in the dark. They're out there just flailing their arms, trying different things, no process. And I think that this is the standard for that. And LinkedIn is like the Wild West of try it and see, right? Mess around and find out, or fuck around and find out.
Yeah.
Like that, it's like, it's that way. And I think LinkedIn is doing a really wonderful thing right now. They are trying to cater to the new generation that is coming into their platform so that they can future-proof that platform. I could not be more supportive of that.
Yeah.
It's just that sometimes you feel like you're in the ocean and the LinkedIn ship sailed away without you.
Yeah. And this is kind of why I go back to, and I love that, James. And the reason I went back to the analogy of it's kind of like the stock market. There's dips as things change and transition, right? And I'm very grateful for somebody. I'm somebody that's survived two recessions and a pandemic. I'm still here, bro. I'm still doing my thing. But I also see it as like, and this is where we're going to come into campaigns, marketing, and that relationship. I sometimes sit there because I've got a lot of friends in marketing. I've worked with some great marketeers. I've got some cool CMO bros and gals. And I sometimes sit there thinking, like, do they get scared that salespeople are now creating their own content? And if it's not on brand and if it doesn't follow guidelines to their company, because I'll give you like a real excerpt for this podcast. I wasn't able to have a really cool guest on my show because their marketing team felt that it would infringe upon their brand and their company. And I respected it. They even had to go through legal to check this stuff out. And the person came back and said, Neil, I really do want to come on the show, but my company's just not kosher with it. And I said, I respect it. I don't want to put you in hot water. But what do you think, how do you, in your opinion, how do you feel marketing perceive the way sales content is coming up, bro?
Yeah, so first of all, I think that the company reserves the right to give you the green light, red light for appearing on podcasts in many cases. And I think depending on the company and what their goals are, like what their policies are, that does kind of matter. I'm big on compliance because you never want to do something that's going to cause you to be in trouble, right? To give you problems you didn't have before you were a guest on that podcast or whatever. Mm. There's also a level of like, don't you want support from your marketing team if you're going to appear on a podcast? Like that's the dollars behind the reach that you need anyway. Mm. So like salespeople and marketing people have to be able to have these conversations together on a regular basis. They have to work together to place you on the right podcasts, to make sure that you're getting in front of the right people, to be presenting the right material that leads them down that funnel that we discussed earlier, content, connection, conversation, opportunity, and so on, right?
Yeah.
All of these things matter. And salespeople have to be a part of marketing campaigns if marketing expects revenue to be generated from those campaigns, unless it's not necessary. But typically, when you're doing a marketing campaign, the hope is that you'll come away with some sort of list and contextual need, some contextual basis of conversation. This is where salespeople come in. If they are in the dark about that campaign until they receive that list and they don't know what campaign it's tied to and have no context for it, chances are good their ability to get a return on investment for your spend is going to be small. So my advice is I'll use a great campaign that we did recently, and it's live right now. It actually just went live like an hour ago. We did a fun with AI turning salespeople into superheroes with Win.ai. And they have done some amazing stuff with images. And
are they the yellow company? Do they do like a gifting campaign where you open the box? Is that the same Win.ai?
They did do one of those. Absolutely. Yeah. I was a part of that campaign as well.
And that's why I remember it.
I was also with a singing pirate at one point with Win.ai. Very creative, incredible ways to engage people, right? Mm. Their goal is to get in front of salespeople. Their goal is also to get their salespeople in front of salespeople. Mm. And these types of campaigns create lists with contexts. And let's be frank, salespeople struggle the most with good context when it comes to what questions to ask, when it comes to good discovery, when it comes to all the different ways that we're supposed to engage with our prospects. We need that context. It's the most important piece of our messaging. So marketing people, my message is go talk to sales, inform them about campaigns. When you give them a list, give them why that list is hitting them and what the context is. Maybe even help them with a little messaging that you think might be effective so they can make it their own. Salespeople, have meetings with your marketing people and ask them about upcoming campaigns.
Yeah.
Ask them how it's going to generate, how it's going to help you generate revenue. These conversations are going to align marketing and sales. And that has been historically the hardest thing to dial in for every company globally since the dawn of business. I don't care what business you are. You struggle with marketing and sales alignment. Potentially companies like Microsoft and Salesforce, well-known organizations like Xerox, right? These companies have done it well for a while. If you have like 40,000 employees, you might be pretty good at it. But I bet you're using some old techniques and there's probably some modernization to be done. So that's a big piece of the puzzle for a lot of companies out there right now, is working campaigns together, not siloed.
100%. And you know, sales and marketing, the reality is they're working towards the same goal, which is to generate revenue. And they're going through different paths. Like sales are having those conversations, marketing are help bringing those conversations into fruition. And a shocking thing that I see a lot of the time when jumping into projects or being an SDR manager was a lot of the reps just never spoke to marketing. They saw them as a different department.
Never even visited their website.
Yeah. And like, here's the maddest thing, bro. Like I do a cold calling exercise. Like imagine you're a brand new rep and I'm coaching you and you want to talk about cold calling. We do this exercise where I set scenario by saying, James, all right, I'm going to be the SDR of your company and you're going to be the prospect. Tell me the job title, tell me the industry, and tell me like what kind of vertical that we're in. And they give me all this stuff. Ahead of that cold call, I've gone onto your website. I've gone onto your case studies and I find a customer. And then what I do is I go in with the intro, I lead with some problems, but I always caveat the beginning of the role play by saying, James, I'm not an expert in industry. I don't sell what you sell, right? Just remember that.
Yeah, I don't sell your product or service.
Yeah. Just remember, I'm doing this as a coach, like just off the cuff. But I basically share an expert from their case study back to them as if they're the prospect. When I end the role play, I'm like, what do you think? They're like, how the hell did you know that stuff? Like you were talking as if you've been working here for years. And I was like, I was just on your way. And I then share my screen. They're like, oh, I didn't know we had that.
Oh my gosh, we have a website that people can learn about us from? That's amazing.
Yeah. And their mind just goes mind blown, boom. But I'm like, marketing have always been my best friend. So like within my first couple of weeks of joining a new company, I'd always have a meeting with a head of marketing or CMO and saying, you know, what's your background? What's your vision for this company? What's the message that you're putting out there? And I would ask for them at least once a month to sit down with my SDR team to educate them and tell them what pieces of content are coming, such as case study, white paper. But also I would ask is what's the follow-up content to that original piece? Because if there was a case study on how to do sales enablement, then where's the ebook that helps you with the 5-point checklist? What is going to be the follow-up that we can send? As a manager, what my VP of marketing, a guy called Jorn, used to do is we used to test our SDRs. So James, this case study has just come out. You don't have to tell us the whole case study, but who's the main person? What was the main challenge? And what was the KPI result? And it would always keep our SDRs sharp.
I would go through a process where I might say something like, sell me our product using this case study as an example, right? And that would be like an even more creative way to get that SDR thinking about talking about it or that AE to talk about it. But I liked what you said about the right things to set up the next step, the right things to set up the next engagement. And I think everything that we do right now hinges on discovery. And I think this has been a sentiment that's been echoed for 5 years, but I think it never has it been more effective to get the most out of somebody's time. Whether it's the most for you or the most for them, the right discovery questions will help you. So I do have a resource for everybody. I think I need to drop it in the live stream chat, right?
Yeah. So I'm going to get it up for us right now. I've got it ready.
Or you can go ahead and drop it in the regular one. But Will Aiken put this together, and this is a great discovery process that's going to give you a framework so that you can get the most out of these conversations. It's very rare that we have somebody that actually wants to talk to us. So getting all of the right questions in line ahead of time before you even start is stage one. I think we go way too deep, way too soon. So how do we get this person to give us the green light to speak intelligently about their deepest problems, the things that they've been sort of keeping close to the chest anyway, right? Like, I don't think people want to advertise that they have a problem. That's something we usually keep pretty close to the chest. So, you know, and you'll hear this in people's conversations in the discovery when they'll say things like, to tell you the truth, right? And that's something they typically wouldn't say. To be honest with you, again, something they're probably not typically going to say to somebody. Okay, full transparency, right? Like, these are markers for people that are giving you the permission to go deeper on a topic. Because if they're going to be transparent with you, you've got to know all the nitty-gritty details, right? One of the best ways to get into the budget conversation, for example, and people fall into this trap all the time. They're like, so do you have budget allocated for this? And right away, these people feel like they're being attacked. They're disconnected. There's a pitch coming. I don't want to be a part of this conversation anymore. How do I get this person off the phone, right? Instead, you want to give them enough value and you want to show them what they need to get the interest. And they're going to ask you when they're ready, okay, brass tacks, what's this going to cost me? It's very tempting here to leave the discovery process and drop a number, a range. I would caution people, don't do this. Instead, ask this discovery question. The second they stop you and they say, all right, this has been a great presentation. How much is it going to cost me? You can say, it sounds like you may have already had an internal conversation about budget. Tell me more about that. Now, the onus is on them to talk to you about what they've discussed at a spend level instead of you dropping a cost and them having the ability to lower that cost right away.
Yeah. That's fucking sick.
This works for me a lot. And SDRs that get asked the cost question on cold calls, it works the same way. Some people are so crass with cold callers these days. They'll straight up be like, yeah, I know who you are. What does it cost me? But you guys have already talked about budget. What's that look like?
And it's an open-ended question. And it puts it back
an open-ended question, but it also puts them on their oh, shit, right? Like, you can feel it. You can feel the vibe change on the call because they're like, damn it, I stepped in that one.
Yeah, because it's kind of like an assumptive push back onto them, like, oh, so you've already spoken about this thing, and like, it's, it sounds like you figured it all out. Like, what's that look like, or how what's been going on?
There's there's another more subtle way to do it that's a bit softer that I'll do sometimes, where I'll say, all right, that's a good question. Let me ask you what you've done research wise and what you might expect to pay for something like this. Right, and that kind of gives it the onus on them again to sort of give me a good ballpark of where they're at. And we can negotiate in a ballpark. What I don't want to do is drop a $50,000 price tag and have you go, that's way out of budget, but thanks for your time. And then the call is over. Like, I've officially blown my entire chance at trying to get this deal past the budget conversation stage.
I agree. And I can now reflect back on times where I've effed up on deals by doing that.
Well, I've effed up countless times to learn that.
Yeah. 100%. And I love that you say that, because when people say, how do you know what you know? It's because I've effed up more times than anybody.
I have failed.
But I think, like, the range bit can also be very dangerous, because they may have a range in their head. And if they haven't spoken about this or looked into this sort of process, and they don't understand the work that goes in behind it, that's where it could, like, be completely misaligned with them as well. And I think, you know, asking, like, around budget questions, what I like to do is ask, like if I'm working with you, James, budget could come from sales enablement. It could come from marketing. It could come from sales. Where would you typically draw the budget for something like this? How does that?
Yeah, I think everybody will say they don't have budget no matter what. When you originally bring it to the table, there's going to be some pushback. What I have found is that even the people that say they don't have budget allocated for something like this, they typically are already working for a competitor. They're working with one of your competitors, right? If that's the case, then there actually is budget allocated for this because you pay one of my competitors. So there is a, you know, what have you tried in the past? Again, this discovery guide, so many great discovery questions in there. What have you tried in the past is going to give you that, well, right now we use, and then they fill in the blank with that competitor that you know. So you say, are you in a contract, right? Again, we're on that discovery path. It's very tempting to start when they say, I use X competitor. It's tempting to leave discovery once again. Sam McKenna talks about leaving discovery. Jen Allen Knuth talks about leaving discovery. Salespeople abandon discovery the moment interest is shown to us, and this is folly.
Yeah, because you get happy ears. Like if you
let me tell you, I'm the worst victim, Neil. I am the worst victim of happy ears. You feel my energy. It's so hard for me to keep that under wraps. Stoicism is not a strength of mine unless I'm providing feedback upward to management. For some reason, I can slide into a stoic approach when I'm managing up. But if I am like peer to peer or selling, stoicism is not my game. I sell on pure energy.
And I hear you. And I think, like, for a bit of transparency here, I recently went through a sales process in my own company where it just felt too good to be true. They gave me all the signals. They had the, you know, the timeline. They had the requirements. And everything. And just something within me was just like, something's off here.
Yeah.
And
it's
gave
a gut feeling.
It is. But I kind of gave them every reason why it wouldn't work. And in my old sales mentality, as long as I give you one objection from a salesperson's perspective to the prospect, if you fight back, we're on. But I was actually, no, I'm going to, every interaction we kept having, and it whittled down where the project wasn't real. They didn't really have the budget. What they were looking to do was just extract free consultancy, get a proposal and quote, and then go give it to somebody else to see if they could get lower price. But because I've effed up so many times in my past, I've now come to that point of not getting the happiest. Because initially I was like, dang, I've got a deal in my pipe. I've got something here. I'm going to bring in some revenue. I was like, nah, man, I ain't not right with this. So discovery.
I had happy ears pretty bad when I started with John Barrows. And everybody that I talked to ended up being an opportunity in my pipeline until, you know, I got the firm finger wave in front of me like, no, 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 don't do this. And, you know, I had the really inflated pipeline with the very small forecast, right? We all go through this when we're, you know, when we're learning and when we're advancing in our careers. What I figured out was that there is a difference between what's in your pipeline and what's on your forecast. And in the one-on-ones that we would have, I would often end up being called out for a big fat pipeline, but a very small forecast. And that got me thinking about the time I was wasting creating opportunities and managing at an opportunity level where there was no opportunity. And it was just in my head that this person was qualified, but not necessarily interesting or interested. So I really had to adjust myself and my approach so that I could satisfy this balance between what's in my pipe and what's in my forecast. And eventually it kind of leveled out, but it did take me some time to adjust those two things. So if anybody out there is looking at your pipeline and going into one-on-ones and being asked about a bunch of deals that you've had going since 2022, I would definitely suggest that you take a step back and recognize the difference between what's in your pipe and what's on your forecast and have the one-on-ones about what's on your forecast and leave the pipeline for prospecting.
I love that. I love that. And we've had those overinflated pipelines and we've had those happy ears and like, yeah, this is definitely going to close, but you have to be cutthroat and very realistic with those pipeline reviews with your head of sales or VP of sales. And my VP of sales always basically said, Neil, I see these deals in the pipe, but you need to sell it to me as to why this deal is going to close. Because if we're going to get resources such as CS, you have to not only sell this to the prospect, but you have to sell it to me. And if I smell any BS, we need to qualify out. I'm going to give you a reason why we're qualifying it out and you have to handle that objection. But I think also with, you know, with discovery, I'm a huge fan of discovery. This is why it's called the SDR Disco Call. It's Discovery Call podcast.
Yeah,
right?
It's not a reference to the 70s, y'all.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason, so like a little bit of like unknown facts about this show. The reason I started this show was because SDRs were listening to it and I'm interviewing people and guests because I'm teaching them my discovery process. Your who you are at the beginning, what's your journey, how did you get there, and like, what's the next steps? That's how I've positioned this and this is how I've done this.
Love it.
Thank you. But what I also say to a lot of salespeople is, you know, at the beginning of a sales cycle, you may have more than one discovery call. You may have a couple with the different stakeholders before you even move into demo. But when you go into demo, you're also doing discovery by asking them about the use cases and how would they see this working for them? You know, what are their concerns, et cetera, et cetera. But then when you hand it over to customer success or account management, they do discovery. They do a kickoff call to understand what requirements you've just had from the AE and what are you looking to do in the next 12 months. And then when it comes to QBR, they're still asking discovery, where you're looking to get to? Have you hit your milestones? What would success look like to you? And you know, when you get to renewal, that's a discovery call. So the phrase that I like to use is discovery never stops in sales. It doesn't just stop at the first interaction. So I love this resource that you've given out with Will as well. So I'd be definitely for our listeners putting the link in. Sign up. I've just literally signed up on the show as well. So I'm looking forward to seeing this as well.
Yeah, I had to name it Disco because it's a great show title.
Thank you, dude. We've spoken about a lot of good topics. I think there's one thing that I want to ask of you, which is kind of like my vent to the sales world, but we can save that for a moment. But are there any other topics that you think the world of sales need to hear on today's show from James?
You know, I probably have 10 or 20, but I think we could save it for the next time I come to the show.
I like that. That's all right. We're orchestrating next steps. I like that. Okay. So how do I position and start this off? Because I don't want to see it as a rant and I don't want to make you feel uncomfortable. And the way that I will start this off is what you're really good at is giving people their flowers, right? You're really good at, in terms of LinkedIn, of like shouting out people that have either helped you in the past or people that are on your journey. And I love that stuff, right?
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I attribute a part of the success in my career, or the way I see success, is I'm connected and I'm talking to the right people and I'm relevant with what I'm doing. That's how I see part of my success. But that is because every person I've come across, I always give them a thanks. I always give them a shout out. And it could be like 5 or 6 years later. Like I did a podcast this week where within a clip, I was talking about some advice my friend gave me 2 years ago. And within the clip, it wasn't about me or the guest. It was me referencing and shouting out my friend Charlotte. Mm-hmm. And I sent that to her yesterday. And we haven't spoken in a little while, but she said, bro, thank you for that. That really made me happy. I'm always happy about giving people their flowers. And I think it goes a long way. Now, this is where the vent comes in. What I am seeing is nowadays, because in the world of LinkedIn and media, people are moving at such a fast rate. I don't see as many flowers given. And I don't know if I'm an old school guy, but with a new gen, sometimes it's you don't see the flowers given. They get to the success. They've had people help them with their stuff, but they don't give them people flowers. Am I going crazy?
I can appreciate this. There's a couple of things at play here. So first of all, I'll explain why I give so many flowers to people, and then I'll talk about why I think you're seeing what I believe to be part of the generational gap, a symptom of the generational gap that's happening on LinkedIn specifically right now. So first of all, I have, for the last, I don't know, 15 years, rode this fence, and on that fence, there are two sides. On the left side of that fence, and downward, there are all these people that want to be where I am. So I am always reaching down to help them up onto my fence.
Yeah.
On the other side of that fence, upward, there are all these people that are where I want to be. And I'm always reaching up so they can help me onto their fence. So I've always got a hand up and down. And that means I'm always climbing onto a new fence and always taking people with me.
Yeah.
And that, for me, is worth more. That mentality, that lifestyle professionally for me, is worth more than any paycheck I'll ever be cut. I don't care about, I haven't cared about how much money I make every year for a very long time. What I care about is the amount of people that I impact on a daily basis. And that's what gets me up in the morning every day.
Amen.
So because my focus is there, the money comes as a result of me being focused on my fence. I help people up. I help people help me up, right? Like that's happening at the same damn time. So with that said, the generational gap that's taking place on LinkedIn is one that you've experienced in the past. You were just on the other end of the spectrum. When I was a young seller learning from people, I was learning so much and growing so fast, I didn't even have an appreciation for the people that were helping me get there. And I'll name names right now. Zach Metters was the first BDR manager that I had when I was an SDR at my first software company. If it wasn't for him giving me the chance, I wouldn't be where I am today. But also, he had a very specific leadership style. For example, one example of that style is that Zach would give you answers for about a month And then he would answer your questions with, let me Google that for you. And it did not. Before you became self-sufficient, because you knew that that was going to be the answer that he gave you. Now, sometimes it was a good question. And if it was, he would always be like, that's a good question. And he would answer the question. But if it was a question you could answer on your own but with a little bit of time spent, he would make you spend that time. And you become self-sufficient. Yeah, so shout out to Zach. There was another leader, Aaron Riley. Aaron Riley was the most positive sales leader I'd ever had in all of what brief sales experience I'd had in the past. Right? And like that guy held you up and coached you no matter how bad things got. If you missed your number, he was like, let's go back and look at your emails together. If you sounded good on the phone, you would get a Google chat, because that was the thing back then. You would get a Google chat from him that said, that would say, man, you sound amazing today on the phone. You're going to be great when you get going. Right. And like that leadership made me believe that leaders out there do actually give a shit about the people that do the job for them every day. So shout out to Aaron and Zach for doing that. Brandon Bruce was also a fantastic CEO, and Jason Hubbard was a marketing person that actually did talk directly to sales and work with them on campaigns. And I think that's why we were able to sell that company.
I love that. And I always like in these episodes, like, who do you give a kudos to? And you've just done it effortlessly like this. So shouts out to those people. And I think, yeah, like, you know, the analogy of you being on the fence, one arm one way, one arm the other, like you're helping people come up a step and people are helping you get up a step. And that's, you know, served me well, not only in LinkedIn or sales life, but
yeah, that's life stuff, man.
Yeah, it is life. And I think I have a folder on my MacBook called the Happy Folder. So when somebody does give me a shout out or saying, hey, I got the promotion, or, you know, I've made it to President's Club, or I've moved into that next company or new job, or I smashed the interview, I keep that shit because it makes me happy. Because when we're on this path of helping people, sometimes, and here's the weirdest one, right? So let me finish my point and then come on to the weird one. Mine's going off like fireworks. It's not a case of validation or recognition, but it just helps you know that you've impacted somebody positively. And to quote what you said, like in a Rick Ross way, success is measured by the amount of people you bless. That is a measurement of success that I really like. And here's a weird one. So I was in a power hour early this year, and this guy comes on, and I just thought he was a regular attendee. And the guy was just saying, great to be on here, Neil, finally to see you again. And I didn't cotton on to what he meant by again. I just thought, you're just a regular attendee, because you see hundreds of people every week, bro. It's hard to keep up with faces. But to cut a long story short, towards the end of this guy kept saying terms that I used in my happy selling training. And he kept using acronyms and things that I give in like full-blown sales training. And I paused and I was like to the dude, I was like, weren't you one of my customers like 2 years ago? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, oh shit, sorry, I didn't recognize you. He said, no, I know you're talking to lots of people, Neil. But he said, I closed my biggest deals in that company. I've now moved on into another company where it's really successful. I'm a head of sales. But he said, the things you did for me back then have really stuck with me. And for a coach or a teacher or just as a person to hear how somebody remembers who the hell you are, that for me is like a little flower moment. So I think giving people's flowers, it benefits and it can propel somebody to want to give more. Like my goal in life is to help 1 billion people. That's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm aiming for.
I love that's still your goal after all these years.
Yeah, 100%.
I will say it this way, and this is how I've said it for years. Not a single closed one opportunity is going to show up to your funeral.
I love that.
But the people that you helped that wouldn't be where they are without you might.
Yeah, 100%. I love that. You're close. Say that one more time for me, Jay. Say that one more time.
No closed won opportunities are going to show up at your funeral, but the people that you helped get where they are and wouldn't be there without you might actually be there.
Mic drop moment. I love that. Mr. Buckley. Well, listeners, watchers, and subscribers, this has been an electrifying episode, and I've hoped you've enjoyed it as much as I have. As with James and all of his resources, his LinkedIn, his website, his new free discovery resource as well will be within the show notes and within the comments. Please check them out. Please give this guy a follow. And to give you flowers, James, like, you've been a pivotal person within my sales career. not in only just on sales, but in music. You've been like my hype man as well on the social, so I appreciate you, bro. And I wouldn't be doing this episode like and having this without your helpers and support. So again, massive credit and love to you.
You do it well, my friend. You were made for it.
Thank you very much. But for all our listeners and watchers, if you've got any thoughts or, you know, ideas off the back of this conversation, drop them in the comments. Reach out to James, pick his brain, let him know. But if you're listening to this in your local podcast platform, please make sure that you give us a rating. Share this inspirational episode with anybody that you think could benefit with it. I think everybody in your family and crew would benefit from it. But also if you're on YouTube and to help us out with the algorithm, please make sure that you like, comment and subscribe down below on happyselling.io. But James, say what, Buckley? Say what, sales, Buckley? It's been a pleasure, my bro, an absolute privilege, and most importantly, happy selling, man.
Yes, sir.